Welcome, everyone, to the NW7US Space Weather and Radio Propagation Podcast. This is Episode 4 for the week of August 30th, 2009. I'm your co-host, Lee Hood, KV7TZR, along with Thomas Hood, NW7US. Thomas is the contributing editor for CQ, CQVHF, and Popular Communications magazines, and the driving force behind the website, hfradio.org. This week, Thomas talks with Dr. Matthew Penn. Dr. Penn is a scientist and associate astronomer at the National Solar Observatory in Arizona. He is involved with research regarding the sun, including sunspot activity. He works with the McMath-Pierce telescope that President John F. Kennedy talked about back in 1962, saying, quote, "The great new solar telescope at the Kitt Peak National Observatory in Arizona is a source of pride to this nation. It presents American astronomers with a unique tool for investigating our sun. This project is of exceptional interest to all of our citizens," unquote. Dr. Penn has been researching a startling trend that exists in sunspots. This trend is showing up in research that started about 13 years ago. If this trend continues, we may not see any sunspots by the year 2015. Thomas explores why with Dr. Penn. But first, here's Thomas with a Space Weather and Propagation Week in Review.
Thank you, Lee, and welcome, dear listener. Thank you for joining us this week for Episode 4 of our podcast. This edition of the NW7US Space Weather and Radio Propagation Week in Review is actually covering more than just last week. Because of several issues, we've not released a podcast episode for the last few weeks. One of the main issues is a restructuring of our production process and a reworking of the podcast because we've been asked to produce two versions of the weekly podcast. Our current format that includes music is a hit, but we've been asked to produce a version that is ham radio friendly, meaning a version of the podcast without music that's tailored for repeaters and other over-the-air bulletin transmissions. Our podcast certainly fits the QST, or information bulletin format, of interest specifically to amateur radio operators. So we've worked out the various issues with creating two versions, and this week we're releasing both versions. Of course, both are available for download at our website, podcast.hfradio.org. This episode of the November Whiskey 7 Uniform Sierra Space Weather and Radio Propagation Week in Review, then, is covering the weeks from Sunday, August 2nd, through Saturday, August 29th, 2009. During most of August, the geomagnetic field was very quiet, with the planetary A index never rising over 14, nor the high latitude A index ever exceeding 16. That's pretty quiet. Only 4 days out of the week since the last episode did we reach 10 or above. This makes for very stable conditions in the ionosphere, the major player in propagating a radio signal far distances beyond line of sight. The daily 10.7 centimeter flux data for the period from August 2 through August 29 range from a low of 66 to a high of 69. Since the last episode of this podcast, there has not been a single sunspot, not even a hint of one. I did expect to see at least tiny spots, but at best, we've only seen the hints of what are known as solar pores. We'll talk more about solar pores later in this episode.
How has shortwave propagation been with such quiet conditions?
Conditions seem to have improved over the last few weeks on the middle shortwave, or high-frequency, spectrum. 20-meter propagation has seen a few nice DX openings, including some really strong European DX, for instance, into the northwestern North American continent. Some of this is typical for this time of year, as sporadic E influences become less frequent and the length of time the sunlight hits the northern hemisphere grows shorter. But there's not been much activity to speak of above 14 or 15 megahertz in terms of ionospheric propagation. The lower bands are also in reasonably good shape, though there's still a lot of noise the lower you go on HF. Summer thunderstorms play a big role in creating atmospheric noise that makes it rough on these lower frequencies.
Does this week look any better?
I expect this coming week to be much like the past few weeks. Expect continued very quiet geomagnetic conditions. We're not expecting any significant coronal hole influences on the geomagnetic field. The stereo behind images don't reveal any large coronal holes rotating into Earth view. There is a small hole that is Earth-facing as this week begins, but so far, the interplanetary solar wind is not configured in a way that is causing any disturbance in Earth's geomagnetic field. We also don't anticipate any rise in the 10.7-centimeter flux, which should remain between 66 and 68 for the next 7 days. Bottom line, expect stable conditions. That's good news when we have very weak ionospheric energy. What propagation we do have will at least be stable around the optimal frequency on a given path. Of course, those optimal frequencies are not as high as we hope for as amateur radio operators, but this prolonged quiet of the solar cycle minimum is providing a lot of opportunity to discover what can be done on lower frequencies. And we're learning that we can do amazing things with what we're given. Great DX is occurring on 40 meters, for instance, on a regular basis.
Thank you, Thomas, for this week's Space Weather and Radio Propagation Week in Review and Forecast. We'd really love to hear from you, our listeners. Please write us about your current observations from your location. How are conditions at your station? Are you working DX? And on what frequencies? Have you had any exciting moments? Perhaps working meteors or other exotic propagation modes? Please write us. You can find a link to our comment page by visiting podcast.hfradio.org, or you can send an email to nw7us@hfradio.org, November Whiskey 7 Uniform Sierra at hfradio.org. We'll report your comments on an upcoming edition of this podcast. I'd like to introduce to you Ashley Brown, KD7QKT. Ashley was first licensed as an amateur radio operator while she was still in high school. She was active in the ham radio school club, KD7JOB, and even used ham radio while she was visiting Germany during her senior trip to Germany. Ashley, what kind of feedback are we receiving?
Thanks, Mom. We continue to receive great feedback on our podcasts. We are finding out that we have listeners in many countries and remote locations, like Antarctica. We want to give a special shout out to Felix, who is working in Antarctica. Guten Tag, Felix, und die ganze Mannschaft unter Antarktis. Felix is an amateur radio operator. His call sign is DL5XL, with a special call sign for his operation while down at the Southern Pole, TP1POL. Great call sign, Felix. He is an electrical engineer by profession and works for a company that provides logistic and technical support to polar research. Felix has traveled to both the northern and southern polar regions of the world on board the ice-breaking research vessel, Polar Stern. Additionally, he has been deployed to the German scientific base Numair in Antarctica 3 times. His first assignment at Numair Station lasted from December 2002 through January of 2004. He returned to Antarctica in December of 2007 and stayed until February of 2008. Currently, Felix is a member of the 29th wintering team at Numair. starting in December of 2008 and expecting to stay until February of 2010. Felix operates Numeris HF Station and administrates the IT network while maintaining electric equipment. Their call signs are DB9020 and DLA21. The internet connection at the polar station is by satellite and not very fast. He says that he schedules a nightly download of podcasts that he would like to hear. He has edited our podcast and is enjoying each episode. Tschüss, Felix, und der ganzen Mannschaft und der Antarktis. We've also had a number of requests to provide a version of our podcast in two packages. One with music for download and listening on various media players, but another package that can be used on amateur radio repeaters and HF stations. We've listened and hope that the new versions work well for everyone. Let us know what you think. You can either write us by visiting podcast.hfradio.org and clicking on the link to send us feedback, or by writing us an email. The address is nw7us@hfradio.org.
Thanks, Ashley.
Yeah, thanks, Ashley. It's great to hear from our listeners. In the last episode, we touched on the fascinating research that has led some scientists to speculate how we may not see sunspots after the year 2015. Sunspots are cool regions with strong magnetic fields on the solar surface, the photosphere. Typically, sunspots have a dark region in the center of the spot, called the umbra, surrounded by a brighter area called the penumbra. The middle region appears darker to us, because it's cooler than the surrounding area. About 13 years ago, specific observations began that recorded the brightness and temperatures of the umbra and the penumbra, as well as data about the magnetic strength within the sunspots. In 2005, two solar scientists, William Livingston and Matthew Penn, examined these solar measurements. These scientists discovered that the magnetic field strength in sunspots was decreasing with time, independent of the sunspot cycle. And, they found, the brightness of the middle area of sunspots, the umbra, was increasing. A simple linear extrapolation of these observations led to the conclusion that sunspots might vanish by 2015. Dr. Matthew Penn works as the McMath-Pierce Telescope Research Associate and Associate Astronomer at the U.S. National Solar Observatory on Kitt Peak, Arizona. He has served on numerous NASA proposal review panels, including SDO and stereo instrument reviews. We've talked about stereo in a recent episode of this podcast, and that's available in the podcast archives at podcast.hfradio.org. I had the opportunity to talk with Dr. Penn about his work and research, including the work that has revealed the trend of weakening sunspots.
I appreciate you taking the time, definitely, to do this interview. It's a pretty hot topic.
Yes, there's a lot of interest and something useful. I think we can start to learn some new things these days.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, the amount of information and research during solar cycle 23. You know, previous cycles, we didn't have the technology to really dig in like we're digging in now. I think it's getting exciting. If we could start with just, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm an associate astronomer here at the National Solar Observatory, and I am a telescope scientist for the McMath-Pierce Solar Facility, which is still actually the largest solar telescope in the world. Quite old. It's dating back from the 1960s now. But we specialize in infrared studies there, basically because the telescope is all reflecting. There are no transmissive optics. It's all mirrors. And so we're able to see out through 12 or sometimes 23 microns, really long wavelengths of light. So in particular, I'm studying different aspects of infrared astronomy and what we can learn at these longer wavelengths about the sun.
Is your primary focus then the sun, or are you also doing other types of astronomical bodies?
I've been focusing on the sun. I have taken some observations of planet Mercury and some of Jupiter's moon, Io. Then when Shoemaker Levy 9 hit Jupiter, we took some observations using our solar telescope of that event. But mostly I'm studying the sun and sunspots and other types of activity there.
Sure. Now, I read your paper that was published, I guess, in 2005, The Sunspots May Vanish by 2015. And that's with William and yourself. And the conclusion is kind of a startling concept that we will have no sunspots by 2015. Could you describe how you observed the sunspots in such a way as to gather that data that led to that conclusion?
Right. The work with Bill Livingston involved his infrared data set, and he has basically been taking observations of an iron line, a neutral iron line, at about 1.5 microns, and measuring the magnetic fields inside sunspots using this particular line. This line is really special. It enables us to measure, to make the most sensitive magnetic measurements in any part of the spectrum. And Bill has been looking at sunspots since 1993, but really in a complete way since about 1998 using the spectral line. We published some early work using his data alone, which showed some fascinating trends that seemed independent of the solar cycle, of the sunspot cycle. It's always dangerous to extrapolate your data to future dates. But using just a real simple linear fit to his data and extrapolating beyond the end of his observations, it suggested that sunspots would, the magnetic fields in sunspots would be below this threshold value by the year 2015, and they would not be forming these dark umbra like we're used to seeing in sunspots.
So would you describe what is an umbra and these dark regions and exactly how you're seeing these magnetic field strengths changing?
Sunspots are composed of two regions. One's a dark umbra, and then that's surrounded by a lighter penumbra. In the umbra of sunspots, the magnetic field is vertical. In the penumbra, the magnetic field bends over horizontally and travels out across the solar surface. Now, the formation of sunspots is not really well understood these days, but we know that the magnetic field somehow prevents the normal convective flows of the sun. The solar surface is covered with granulation, which are rising bubbles of hot gas. And if the magnetic field on the sun becomes strong enough, somehow this convection becomes oppressed, and that area of the sun then becomes darker because the heat transport is reduced. This convection is minimized. Now, Bill's data suggests that there is a magnetic cutoff, and that with magnetic fields below about 1800 Gauss, the magnetic fields are not strong enough to suppress this convection. But with magnetic fields above 1800 Gauss, the magnetic field can prevent convection and form these dark sunspot umbra. So looking at his data, that seemed to show a real simple linear trend that as sunspots, or as time was progressing through the last solar cycle, the average magnetic field inside sunspots was decreasing linearly with time. And if we extrapolate that, then by 2015, the average magnetic field would be below 1800 Gauss. Now, it's a little dangerous because we're talking about averages, and this is really cutting-edge kind of research. There's a lot of scatter. That is that there are some really strong sunspots on the sun sometimes and as well as weak ones on the sun. And so there's a wide range of magnetic field strengths in sunspots. To look at Bill's data, what we were doing was taking the yearly averages. So every year we would add up all the sunspots and take the mean magnetic field strength. And that showed a linear trend.
The sunspot region 1024 a few weeks back was a rather large sunspot, was nicely formed, produced a C-class flare, actually maybe it produced two flares. But right after that, we had two sunspots in a row that NOAA did not number an active region, but the SIDC numbered the Catania numbers, I think was 15 and 16. And they did not observe, when I looked at their observation records, they classified it as a sunspot without a penumbra, both of them. And I found that kind of fascinating in light of your research. And prior to 1024, there were a series of sunspots very similar to that, very small spots with, you know, no penumbra at all.
Right.
And, you know, that led to people saying, well, those aren't sunspots. Well, they were numbered with an ISN. And it kind of leads to, you know, conjecture that what you've been researching is still bearing out here in 2009. Now, this paper was written in 2005, and at the end you said it obviously is something to continue to watch as the new cycle develops.
Right.
So what kinds of things are you discovering in more recent research? And in the beginning of this cycle, they officially say 23 ended in December of last year, so far statistically. What are you finding so far with this new cycle?
Yes, so that's the main reason that we published this EOS paper, was that according to Bill's data, the linear trend is still continuing. There have been, of course, there's lots of scatter, so lots of noise in the data, but looking at his data through February of 2009, it actually fits that extrapolation that we made back in 2005. You know, with some noise. So, yeah, exactly as you've been discussing, a lot of the new sunspots, a lot of the sunspots for the new solar cycle have been just pores, that is, small umbra without well-formed penumbra. Of course, there have been some real sunspots or things that have have umbra and penumbra, but a large number have just been pores without penumbra. But that's, again, another exciting trend. And certainly if it continues for very much longer, it's going to be something that's very different from the last sunspot minimum. In the EOS paper, we're basically asking, are these spots different from, you know, other sunspots, besides the fact that they're very weak? Actually, what we're finding is that they're actually not completely different. They're similar to the sunspots of the last solar cycle in that they have the same relationship between the brightness in the umbra and the magnetic field strength, but we're seeing more and more weak sunspots appearing now. That is, sunspots are coming to the surface with lower magnetic fields on average than before. So it's not like we're looking at completely different types of beasts, but we're actually looking at just sunspots that follow the same, you know, physics, which is comforting, but that are actually on the weaker tail of the distribution of sunspots that we normally observe.
Now, when you mention that they're going to disappear by 2015 and you talk about that cutoff, I saw a mention about the temperature and that also is following this linear progression,
right,
and that relates to the brightness.
Yes.
And that there's going to be a point in time when the brightness of a sunspot is going to be about the same as the general non-spot surface of the sun.
Right. So, observationally, there's a relationship between the magnetic field strength that we observe and the brightness of a sunspot umbra. If you think about the physics about what's going on, inside a sunspot, there's a strong magnetic field, and so it turns out the gas pressure there has to balance the gas pressure in the outer parts, in so-called the quiet sun, where there is no magnetic field. And to do that, the temperature is reduced because the magnetic field adds an extra term in the pressure balance, the horizontal pressure balance. Now, as you reduce that magnetic field strength, you have to increase the temperature in order to balance the horizontal pressure from the quiet sun outside of the sunspot. And so eventually, as you cross this threshold magnetic field strength, the temperature between the inside of the sunspot and the quiet sun, the temperature difference becomes zero. So it really ceases to be a sunspot. It just becomes a magnetic field region at that point. And so that's another parameter that we could measure from Bill's observations would be the brightness. And that showed the same type of linear trend that the magnetic field strength showed with time. There's a third parameter, too. If you look in dark sunspots with very low temperatures, molecules can form because of the lower temperature there, about 3,500 Kelvin. But if you look at the strength of these molecular absorption lines with time, they've become weaker and weaker as time has progressed, and that's consistent with an increasing temperature inside sunspots. And so that was our third diagnostic in that 2005 paper, was that not only was the brightness increasing, but the molecules were disappearing from sunspots. And they both indicated an increase in the temperature.
Can you tell us a bit about how the telescope works and how do you use it to measure these temperatures and these magnetic strengths?
Yeah, we're using the McMath-Pierce Solar Telescope, which is 1.6-meter diameter reflecting telescope. It has several instruments attached to it, and one of them is our large spectrograph. The spectrograph tank is 14 meters long. And what it does is it spreads out the spectrum of the sun into a rainbow, if you will, with a very high dispersion. That is, the rainbow would spread across 80 feet, across the observing room. That allows us to look at very particular wavelengths and very particular absorption lines in the solar spectrum. And one of these lines at 1.5 microns is from neutral iron. And it's special because it has a certain sensitivity to magnetic fields. In a magnetic field, spectral lines are split due to something called the Zeeman effect, where the magnetic field changes the characteristics of the electron energy levels. And this particular line from neutral iron at 1.5 microns is very sensitive to magnetic field. It has very large splitting, Zeeman splitting. So in Bill's observations, what he's done is he scanned this spectral line inside sunspots. He would go to the telescope and point the telescope at every sunspot that he saw on the disk of the sun, take a spectrum of that sunspot, and store it into his archive. Later, we would analyze the Zeeman splitting of the spectral line, and that would give us a measurement of the magnetic field strength. We would also analyze the overall intensity of the spectrum, which gave us a temperature. And then next to this iron line, there were lines from OH, a molecule just with one hydrogen and one oxygen atom. And we would measure the depth of those lines to give us a handle on the molecular population, the abundance of molecules in the sunspot. And so Bill did this from roughly 1993, and he's continuing up through 2009 now. Roughly eight times a year, he spends a week at the telescope and makes these observations.
So going back historically, prior to his observations, we've not had an opportunity to take these sorts of measurements. And as I've stated in various commentaries before, it's a bit presumptuous, I think, for us humans to make incredible statements of fact on very little data in terms of a star that's billions of years old. We've not had the opportunity to witness things at the level that we're witnessing them now or observing them now scientifically, even 100 years ago, 200 years ago. So in the scope and scheme of things, I think it's very hard to determine a precise model that we can use to predict something, because we don't know what might be coming across, in a year or 2 years or a decade from now. The sun may completely surprise us because we don't fully understand cycles within the sun. And your research suggests that there's another cycle going on that we've not witnessed scientifically before and is at work independent of the 11 or 22-year cycle that's going on magnetically.
Yes, that's certainly a good point, is that as technology gets better and better, we're looking at the sun in different ways, certainly different from, the way Galileo started looking at it in the 1600s and different from the Chinese astronomers 1000 or 2000 BC. And so, yeah, we're bound to discover new and exciting things. We do know that in the 1700s, there was a lack of sunspots in the normal 11-year cycle, 11-year sunspot cycle. went through three or four cycles where there were very few, if any, sunspots. That was, of course, called the Maunder minimum. There have been studies which suggest that that was associated with climate change on the Earth. Basically, lower temperatures occurred in Europe. And there are some studies which suggest that there's a cause and effect there, that actually with less magnetic activity on the sun, there would be less heating of the Earth. So we do know that this 11-year cycle, which has been going on for several hundred years now, does get interrupted occasionally, or at least in one case at the Maunder minimum. And so it's exciting to think that maybe we'll be able to experience another, you know, disruption in this cycle, which will give us clues as to what its, you know, what ultimately its origins are.
So there is credibility to the idea that we may see another one of those periods through several sunspot cycles, perhaps, where there will be few, if any, sunspots.
You've been listening to the interview between Dr. Matthew Penn of the National Solar Observatory and Thomas Hood, NW7US. Next week, be sure to listen to the conclusion of this interview on Episode 5 of this podcast.
Information about this podcast and details on how you can support the podcast may be found at our website, podcast.hfradio.org.
Visit the podcast website for details on each episode, as well as information on space weather science, radio wave propagation, and much, much more. If you'd like to join the online discussion about these podcasts, the topics presented each week, or if you want to present questions for Thomas to explore in an upcoming podcast, browse to hfradio.org/forums and join us online. All the music on this podcast is written and performed by Thomas Hood. If you like the music, let us know. This podcast is produced by Thomas and Lee Hood and supported in part by donations from our listeners. Details about how you may help keep the website and podcast alive are at our webpage, podcast.hfradio.org. Until next week, on behalf of Thomas, NW7US, I'm Lee, KD7TZR, bidding you 73. Have a great week.
The NW7US Space Weather and Radio Propagation Podcast is copyright 2009. By Thomas David Hood, NW7US. This has been a production of Thomas Hood and Lee Hood, KD7TZR. All rights are reserved.